This is special coverage from NPR News of today's terrorist attacks in New York City and Washington. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And in New York, I'm Robert Siegel. Today, the United States was hit by the worst terrorist act in history. Four commercial jets were hijacked and crashed, three of them into their apparent targets, the World Trade Center in New York City and the Pentagon just outside Washington, D.C. A fourth airliner crashed in Pennsylvania. Hundreds of people were aboard the planes that crashed, and the death toll could be in the thousands. Moments ago, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld spoke to reporters at the Pentagon.
There is no question but that the attack against the United States of America today was a vicious, a well-coordinated, a massive attack against the United States of America.
New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani also held a news conference about an hour ago.
A situation like this, a tragedy like this, instills lots of feelings of anger and hatred, and I'd ask the people of the city not to have those feelings right now or ever. I mean, the reality is that hatred and insanity and prejudice caused this situation probably, and we have a lot of people in the city of all different backgrounds and all diverse religions, and they're not responsible for this. Whoever is responsible for this came from outside the city of New York.
It's New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani.
Marianne McCune is a reporter with member station WNYC in New York. Right now, she's at the Major Triage Center just north of the World Trade Center. It's a makeshift center handling people being brought out of that building. Marianne McCune, tell us what's going on right now. What can you see?
Well, there have been groups of rescue workers that have been waiting for the debris to settle after the last collapse of 7 World Trade Center. It was the last bit that collapsed a little more than an hour ago.
7 World Trade Center was, that's not one of the towers. It's a separate building, yes.
That is the bottom of one of the towers.
I'm sorry, go on.
That happened a little after 5. There was another boom, and everyone here at the Triage Center came running toward the building we're out in front of, running for cover, because it looked like the smoke was coming up this way. I think that people feared that they would get buried, like some of the people have been describing who have come out of the collapse of the World Trade Center. But they moved this triage center up here in order to avoid being affected by that last collapse. They were actually expecting it, and now there's still gray smoke filling the sky where once we would see the Twin Towers. The skyline has this big hole in it. But here, there are groups of rescue workers that have been waiting to go out and waiting for the debris to settle so they could go out and start to try to find people. Just a few minutes ago, a few dozen New Jersey State Police loaded into a bus. They were wearing emergency helmets and oxygen masks and equipped even with night vision devices. They're expected to move large pieces of steel and debris and hopefully find people and then bring them here where there are ambulances, doctors, counselors, volunteers, all waiting to make use of themselves, hoping there's still a chance for them to use their expertise to help people.
I know you were in Lower Manhattan throughout this afternoon. What was it like? What could you see happening there?
Everyone I spoke to was coming as fast as they could away from the collapse. Some people had this gray ash sort of caked into their hair all over their bodies. There were some rescue workers who were washing in a fountain in Foley Square, which is just north of City Hall. They told terrible stories. The worst, I think, are of seeing people jumping out of very high windows on the World Trade Center. Some people talked about being almost buried in debris. Since then, I've seen people walking around, like, for example, with gauze taped over their eyes. I think there are a lot of eye injuries. But I've also seen an incredible volunteer effort. New Yorkers have been gathering impromptu at the police barricades. They've just been coming south as they heard of this disaster. And there was one area, also in Foley Square, where people were dividing into people who had medical expertise, people who had military expertise, people who wanted to give blood. There was even a group taking scaffolding from a building site and making stretchers, hammering and nailing together stretchers. Mayor Giuliani earlier commended New Yorkers for coming together, and I've seen that very vividly today.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thanks.
Marianne McCune, a reporter with member station WNYC in New York City.
Our colleague Robert Siegel is also in New York City and has been out on the streets today. Robert, first, are you looking in New York at general chaos in the city, or has it been relatively orderly?
Well, under the circumstances, I think you'd have to say it's relatively orderly, although I guess order would be the it wouldn't be one's first reaction to the scene today, as all of the millions of people who come into Manhattan to work, a disproportionate number of them concentrated downtown in the financial district, then tried to get out and get back home. So orderly might be going too far, but I think that in terms of the sort of disorder that one might have feared, panic, looting, that sort of thing, no, it hasn't been that way at all. And as you heard from Marianne McCune, I mean, I saw people turning out in droves at Bellevue Hospital, volunteering to give blood, wanting to do something positive, constructive, helpful today.
People have been trying to get out of Manhattan, and in fact, the city officials have urged people to go home if they can. Mass transit isn't running. How are people leaving?
Well, some of them are walking. They're walking through Manhattan. They're walking across the bridges into Brooklyn, if that's where they live. At one point today, the Queens Midtown Tunnel opened up, and people with vans were filling up with as many passengers who could fit in. I was there when one big bus came around and just would take everybody who was lined up, as many as could fit into the bus, to one spot. But at Grand Central Station, for example, where I was earlier in the day at the terminal, people were trying to find trains. The station was locked at 11 o'clock in the morning. I met a gentleman who was trying to get on a plane for Scarsdale, and I just called him up. It took him, he told me, until 2:45, from at 11 a.m. until 2:45 p.m., to make it to Scarsdale in Westchester, after the trains had finally started running. And there are a million stories like that all around New York today of people who waited for some opportunity to get home and finally found one.
We've been hearing about tremendous amounts of soot and ash and the debris of paper, the explosion from the World Trade Center that has just created immense clouds of dust, obscured the sun. What is it like now as the sun is setting?
No, well, where I am, and I haven't been close enough to the area way downtown to see where all has been blanketed with ash and where the sky was blackened. But I've seen cars come out of there encrusted with ash. And as you walk along 42nd Street, which, again, this is several miles north of the southern tip of Manhattan, you look down Lexington Avenue, down 3rd Avenue, down 2nd Avenue, and everywhere you see the buildings at the far end of downtown, between them, this huge cloud. And it is as high as a skyscraper, and it is hanging there. And it hangs there literally, physically, and in many other more figurative ways over New York today.
Robert, thanks very much.
Sure.
Our colleague Robert Siegel, who is in New York City.
Here in Washington, NPR's Steve Inskeep has been checking out reports of car bombs and other disturbances during this day. He spent most of his time at the Pentagon, where one of the hijacked planes crashed into that building shortly after 9:30 this morning. Steve, let's go back and establish the timeline for that incident, please.
Well, this began shortly after the World Trade Towers were bombed or attacked this morning, Noah. People were actually beginning to respond to that here inside the Pentagon, which is where I am now. Military employees were flipping on televisions. After the second plane hit the second tower, it became clear to everyone here that it was a terrorist incident, and they were preparing to respond to that. And then people inside this building felt a tremendous explosion, saw fire, the building filled with smoke, and they raced to deal with it. As a matter of fact, a number of reporters have been brought into the building for this news conference with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld a short time ago, and I can tell you that this part of the building, and this is the world's largest office building, or it was when it was built, and I'm some distance away from where the airplane struck, and
Steve,
yet this part of the building is still filled with smoke.
Thank you, Steve. We're going now to hear from Attorney General John Ashcroft, who's speaking.
We will not tolerate such acts. We will expend every effort and devote all the necessary resources to bring the people responsible for these acts, these crimes, to justice. Now is the time for us to come together as a nation to offer our support, our prayers for victims and for their families, for the rescue workers, for law enforcement officials, for every one of us that has been changed forever by this horrible tragedy. The following is a summary of the known facts surrounding today's incidents. American Airlines Flight 11 departed Boston for Los Angeles, hijacked by suspects armed with knives. This plane crashed into the World Trade Center. United Airlines Flight 175 departed Boston for Los Angeles, was hijacked and crashed into the World Trade Center. American Airlines Flight 77 departed Washington Dulles for Los Angeles, was hijacked and crashed into the Pentagon. United Airlines Flight 93 departed Newark for San Francisco, was hijacked and crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Crime scenes have been established by the federal authorities in New York, in Washington, D.C. area, in Pittsburgh, in Boston, and in Newark. The full resources of the Department of Justice, including the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the U.S. Attorney's Offices, the U.S. Marshals Service, the Bureau of Prisons, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Office of Justice Programs are being deployed to investigate these crimes and to assist survivors and victim families. Thousands of FBI agents in all of the field offices across the country and in the international LEGAT offices, assisted by personnel from other Department of Justice agencies, are cooperating in this investigation. The FBI has established a website where people can report any information about these crimes. That address is www.ifccfbi.gov. That address again, www.ifccfbi.gov. Individuals can report any information they know about these crimes to that website. It takes courage for individuals to come forward in situations like this, and I urge anyone with information that may be useful and helpful to authorities to use this opportunity. The Office of Victims of Crime has established a toll-free 800 number for family and friends of victims. They can call 800-331-0075 to leave contact information for a future time when more information is available, to find out information about a victim, or to find out information about the rights of victims and the services available to victim survivors and victim families. The determination of these terrorists will not deter the determination of the American people. We are survivors, and freedom is a survivor. A free American people will not be intimidated, nor will we be defeated. We will find the people responsible for these cowardly acts, and justice will be done. Tommy.
The Attorney General of the United States, Attorney General Ashcroft, who's just been speaking about the investigations that are going to take place and the various federal government entities that will be pointed at this investigation, including the FBI. Barb Bradley is here with us today. She has been covering the FBI and watching over what they have been willing to say so far about what they know. And I gather that it has not been much, Barbara.
No, there's not been much at all. They've basically said we're investigating and we're looking after the victims of the crime and we're coordinating with other agencies. What Attorney General Ashcroft said right now is really the only real solid information we've had, and a lot of it was updates. I mean, it's probably the first time that we've confirmed from an official source that there were knives on one of the flights. That information, I believe, there were knives on one of the flights, and that one went from Boston to LA and crashed into the World Trade Center. We also know that the terrorists use, knives in the flight that crashed in the Pentagon. We know that because Barbara Olson, the wife of Theodore Olson, the Solicitor General, called her husband and gave that fact right before the crash. So we're little by little, we're going to get a little bit of information. What weapons they used, that kind of thing. It's very slow.
And there is so far no declaration of responsibility that we know about, and the Attorney General did not provide any information about who might have caused these things to happen.
No, there are just a lot of rumors, and, you know, a lot of people point to Osama bin Laden, but they've not confirmed that. They just call them terrorists and, you know, kind of faceless enemies. So it's going to be, I should say, though, that when you talk to terrorist experts, they say that this has Osama bin Laden's fingerprints all over it, in the sense that the kind of 1-2 punch that we saw here, the World Trade Center and then the Pentagon, was similar to the 1-2 punch that we saw with the two U.S. embassies in Africa. So there appear to be similarities here, and he is a kind of a logical suspect.
And an attack that is large, that is extraordinary in scale, of the sort of thing that apparently Osama bin Laden has talked to newspaper editors and has given interviews indicating that he had something big in the works.
Yes, apparently there have been a couple of warnings just in the last 3 weeks about something like this happening. He has a lot of resources. As you know, he's a very wealthy Saudi billionaire, so he can fund this kind of activity. Apparently he trains pilots. He has lots of money. He can do the logistics. He's quite an organized fellow, and apparently he's been talking about this kind of thing for a while.
Well, after a day of not knowing what was going on and not hearing from any officials in the federal government, we have heard very recently from Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and now from Attorney General John Ashcroft, and apparently we will hear this evening in about an hour and a half from President Bush.
That's
so we're
right.
getting a little bit more information, official information. Thanks very much. NPR's Barbara Bradley.
You're welcome.
On Capitol Hill, this was supposed to be a week to debate the defense budget. Instead, this morning, the Capitol was evacuated and closed down. Lawmakers wondered what the carnage of this day says about America's intelligence capability. NPR's Peter Overby has a report.
At mid-morning, there was a stunned calm on Capitol Hill. Two Republican senators and a few staff members stood across the street from the evacuated Capitol and listened to the radio. Chuck Hagel of Nebraska is a Vietnam veteran on the Foreign Relations Committee. John Warner is a World War II vet and ranking Republican on the Armed Services Committee. First, Senator Hagel.
This country has been changed forevermore. This is the second Pearl Harbor. It's that serious. When you think about what has happened here today, it's as serious as what happened at Pearl Harbor. Different kind of an enemy, different time. This is an attack on America.
They just hit the State Department.
Really?
That's what somebody told me. It's a carefully coordinated attack. It's remarkable, the volume of these things, and I don't know, somehow the intelligence community, I don't know, we'll have to see.
As concerned as Warner might be, he and most other members of Congress are in no rush to second-guess America's intelligence network. A few Democrats pointed out, quietly, that they want to shift some $800 million from Star Wars missile defense to anti-terrorism work. That was supposed to be debated in a committee meeting this morning. But conservative Republican Dana Rohrabacher of California lashed out at what he called the biggest intelligence failure of his lifetime. He blamed the administration of former President Bill Clinton.
We should do a clean sweep. We've got to hold those people who hold cushy jobs in the senior executive level of our well-paid intelligence operations, to sweep them away and do some major reform. We can't just let this get away by saying, oh, there's nothing we could have done. There's a lot we could have done to prevent this, and it's a disgrace that our country hasn't done it.
But Rohrabacher was out on a limb. More typical was Arizona Republican John Kyle on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Like President Bush and many other lawmakers, he talked about protecting the homeland.
It is very unfortunate but true that it takes incidents like this to focus people's attention on the fact that we've got a big job to do in this country, and that's to protect our homeland. A lot of voices have been saying that, but because we appear to be safe and secure, we have other priorities. We need to increase our spending on intelligence. We need to increase our intelligence gathering and an analytical capability. We need to increase our ability to infiltrate terrorist organizations. And then we need to have better plans on how to deal with attacks once they occur. It's my hope that this incident, if there's anything good that comes out of us, it will be that it will refocus our attention on this first priority.
For members of Congress, the first priority today was to demonstrate that the congressional branch of government might have been temporarily out of its building, but it isn't out of business. As the tragedy of the day sinks in, the debate over intelligence operations has just begun. Peter Overby, NPR News, The Capitol.
To recap briefly the story of today's terrorist activity, the worst in history, it struck important financial and military centers. Deaths and injuries are expected to be in the thousands. Four commercial domestic flights were hijacked, two American Airlines flights and two United Airlines flights. All four were deliberately crashed. Two destroyed the World Trade Center towers in New York City. One crashed into a field 80 miles outside of Pittsburgh. One smashed into the headquarters of the U.S. military, the Pentagon. This evening, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said it is too early to give estimates of those killed, but said they will not be few. He also said that...
This is special coverage from NPR News. In Washington, I'm Linda Wertheimer.
I'm Noah Adams.
And in New York, I'm Robert Siegel. One of the four planes hijacked today, the one that did not reach its target, was United Airlines Flight 93 from Newark to San Francisco. It crashed in Pennsylvania. There were 45 people on board when the jet slammed into a grassy field. NPR's Ken Barkas is about a quarter of a mile from the crash site in south-central Pennsylvania. It's about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. Ken, how densely populated is the area where the plane went down? What's it look like?
It really is very rural here. As I was coming up here, I actually saw more cows and cattle than I did people. This is corn country. This is the rolling hills of Pennsylvania. The plane actually seemed to crash in what is a reclaimed strip mine site. A lot of coal mining around here. The sun's going down now, Robert, and I think we're moving into the next phase here. The FBI special agent in charge says tonight is the night for the what they call the forensic archaeologists. That'll give you some idea of the situation of the scene, and that they're actually going digging. They're bringing in huge diesel-powered lights to light up the scene. Tonight, they say the most important thing is to protect the crime scene. Tomorrow, they say they'll start to grid everything out and start to go over it foot by foot.
The governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Ridge, has spoken about this. What has he said?
That's right. He came in. He helicoptered in. He said that he had spoke with both Governor Pataki and Governor Gilmore and offered emergency resources, which they may be taking up. Some of the specialists from search and rescue from Pennsylvania will be going to those states. And he also appealed for people to make blood donations, saying that there's no way he thought that the cities could cover the need after the wounded get in.
Governor Pataki, because the World Trade Center is in New York, and Governor Gilmore, because the Pentagon is in Virginia, I assume, is
exactly
what the point was there. This was the flight, this was one of the flights, the one that crashed in Pennsylvania, from which I gather there were cell phone calls made by passengers describing what was happening.
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth about that. The FBI is very a bit cagey about that. They say there were no reports that they know of Mayday from the pilot. However, there does seem to be a call, at least from one passenger, who was apparently in a bathroom in the plane. Now, they're trying to make sure that call actually came from the plane. The FBI says they are trying to secure that 911 call tape, unless they haven't already. They're trying to figure out what exact cell it went to, because as the plane keeps flying west, it goes in and out of different 911 zones. So they're trying to locate and secure that tape. They've also had some concerns here today about biohazards. It may be just a common thing, but the reason that the archaeologists have not been digging yet is because they have a lot of hazmat people here. They say they want to make sure it's clear before they start digging.
Is there any indication there at all whether the plane that was, after all, flying west toward San Francisco was still headed in that direction when it crashed, or had it turned around toward Washington or New York?
That question was asked repeatedly, and the FBI officials here, at least, could not say whether it had turned around or not. There were rumors about it turning around, but they believed that it was heading west at the time, but they didn't have better information than that.
Okay, Ken. Thank you.
Thank you.
NPR's Ken Barkas, who is just outside Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's in the south-central part of the state, about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh.
As people around the country watched and heard news of today's events unfold, they called their neighbors and relatives, hoping that no one they knew had been hurt, and tried to make sense of the incomprehensible. NPR's Lynn Neary has a report.
The images took a moment to absorb. It was the World Trade Center, but what was happening to it? Why was smoke pouring out of it? How could two planes have hit it within such a short amount of time? Then, a sickening feeling as reality sunk in, and the terrible news kept coming. The Pentagon on fire, rumors that the White House had been struck, and the State Department. Government buildings all over Washington were being evacuated, and just outside, right in front of this building, the fear was palpable.
Get back!
Yes, get back!
Well, I think we'll take their advice. Let's get back.
A van without a driver was parked in the middle of the street. The police were checking it for explosives and cordoning off the street, only adding to the confusion as office workers emptied out of nearby government buildings and tried to find a way to get home. Cindy Cheeks works for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
They told us to leave now, and we don't have anywhere to go. That's why I'm standing here looking stupid.
Where are you supposed to go?
I can't call my husband. Home, Maryland. I can't get home. It's no metros running. It's no buses running. Look at all the congestion out here.
What's your reaction to all this, Cindy?
I'm scared. I'm frightened, really. It's horrible.
By noon, most public transportation was running, and a strange calm replaced the panic. A young woman named Becky took a cigarette break and contemplated the empty streets as the last workers left the building she managed.
It's very surreal around here, I think, right now. People are in shock. It's almost like an eerie sort of quiet, like it's too hard to believe that this is really happening.
Bob Sauerwein remembers what it was like on April 19, 1995, when a huge bomb exploded in his hometown. Sauerwein runs a small cafeteria near where the Alfred P. Murrah building once stood in Oklahoma City.
I was here during the bombing when the memorial was down there, and this building here shook as well. So I can imagine what them people in New York are going through right now. It just tears my heart out when things like this happen to our country.
At the Oklahoma City Memorial, Executive Director Carrie Watkins says the staff wanted to stay open all day, but few visitors came, and by afternoon she decided to close down for safety reasons. Just as they were 6 years ago, says Watkins, the reverberations from today's attack will be felt across the country.
It leaves people with a sense of uncertainty. It leaves people with a sense of pride for their country. And I think as Americans, we unite together and take a stand that we will not let terrorists defeat us. They'll hurt us. They'll break our hearts. They'll, you know, hurt our souls, but they're not going to defeat us as a country.
As stunning a blow as the Oklahoma City bombing was, today's attacks on the nation's capital and the country's financial center seem to have a more devastating effect on the national psyche. Deborah Margulies heard the news in Philadelphia.
The whole world looks to New York, and in, 18 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, they shut our country down. That, I think, is a little scary.
Brendan Olkus, a young DJ who works in a club in Philly, says his sense of the world will never be the same.
26 years old, I've lived pretty much my entire life in a relative state of peace. But I've always felt like, you know, I've always felt safe, and I don't know that I've ever felt really patriotic. I mean, I've just sort of felt like I've existed. And today was the first time I ever felt like, wow, like my homeland has been attacked.
Some sought refuge in prayer.
Let us pray, O God, giver of solace in the presence and hope for the future.
About a dozen people attended this prayer service at the Episcopal Cathedral of St. Mark in Salt Lake City, Utah. Michael Mitchell, a native of Utah, had just moved back after living in New York for 9 years.
I've been on the internet all day trying to be in touch with my friends, and she can't get through by phone. I've just been trying to be in touch with people and see if they're all right.
Now, says Mitchell, like most people, He's wondering about the U.S. response.
I'm scared now that we're going to retaliate in a way that's going to pull us into something much, much deeper. And that's something that really scares me. We then get in a state of, you know, retaliation, and it just escalates. As I was sitting here today during the prayer service, I was thinking, you know, how can we begin the forgiveness process right away and still grieve and still have, you know, that righteous anger and still try and set things right? But I don't know that that necessarily means that we, you know, bomb the hell out of whoever did it.
It will take a long time for the emotions of today to settle in, for people to fully absorb what happened. But in the minutes and hours after the attacks occurred, there was a sharp sense of violation and a keen sense of uncertainty about what lies ahead. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.